Secrets, memos, and audio tape. Oh, my. From Fox News Radio, I'm Dana Perino.
And I am Stoker Starwalt.
And this is Perino and Starwalt. I'll tell you what.
Tell you what.
Anything going on?
Well,
honestly, I'm afraid to go to sleep.
Don't be afraid to go to sleep. It's essential.
I was afraid to check the news this morning. I was like, oh, no.
Well, as soon as it gets to be 5 o'clock anymore, I'm waiting for the next M80 to go off in the Hills Brothers coffee can and blow everything up in Washington. And we've had it for day after day. And it becomes, it's funny for me. It's hard for me to remember. I was doing Power Play today, or my fake TV show, that thanks to you and Jason Bonewald, I've just decided to make into a game show, which is fun. But as I was looking back through the news of the week to do the weekly news quiz, and you know what I found out? It had only been like a week since Comey. And that's it. And it seems like somebody put on Twitter that the Trump presidency feels like we're doing it in dog years.
Yep. That's an insult to dogs. I'm just kidding.
No.
It does feel like that. Like every day is worth seven. And so I guess it is kind of like that.
And you say, was that really only a week ago? And that the fact that in the space of time that you have a week ago we were talking about the firing, and then that's followed by...
What's interesting is that like there's always the news and then there's the background of the news, which is always so intriguing. Like the background that Jared Kushner pushed for the Comey firing, and then President Trump was mad at him because it didn't go as planned, and then Kushner yelled at the communications people and blamed them, even though it kept them in the dark, and it's just like, wow.
You know, I mean, to cut right down to the quick of it, at what point does this president have enough desperation to have trust enough in an individual to let them put this White House in order? I mean, I think about, you know, I was talking to somebody, maybe it was you, it all runs together, but I was talking to somebody about how past presidents always have an accountability structure, because the problem with the presidency is that the framers intended to give the president the powers of a king, limited by time and by – so time in two senses. The president has short-term powers that are absolute, and then he's limited by term. And then – so we vest all of this in a person. You need an accountability structure beyond that. And for Barack Obama, it was his wife and in the person of Valerie Jarrett, who she basically sent as a minder to the West Wing to say, no smoking, number one.
Mom.
And number two, don't do anything stupid.
No smoking in the restrooms.
No smoking in the boys' room. For George W. Bush, the presence of his father hovered out over the deep, right? Mm-hmm. And his dad, and as he wrote about it, you know, his dad was very, I'm not going to interfere. I was president. You're the whole president. I'm none of the president.
Right.
But then the accountability structure, especially in the person of people like.
God, you want to know a great story about that?
Do you know any?
I do know a great story. So in the fall, let's see, maybe like December, it was graduation 2008. So December 2008, the fall graduation at College Station, Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. Where George H.W. Bush's presidential library is.
This is all true.
President George W. Bush. Oh, by the way, Erin, if you're listening, that's where the speech was. It was at the commencement. I was just talking to her, you know, Erin Landers. Erin Landers.
Say
you
know, Erin Landers. Say her name. You should follow her.
I know, Twitter. But like, yeah, everyone should follow Erin Landers. Erin Landers works for Dana Perino and Company. Actually.
Who's the and Company? The and Company.
And Company
Peter
is
and Jack,
Dana and Erin. I also have a story about how I came up with the name of that company, but I will first tell you the story about George H.W. Bush.
Ma'am.
And we can blow off the company. So 43 goes right to give the commencement address, and 41 is there.
Okay.
Great speech. Great little visit with the president. I think we had lunch or something. Then we got to head back to Texas, to D.C. So
what year is this? Say that again.
December 2008.
Okay.
So the presidency is coming to an end, right? 41 was walking at the time with a cane. And we get out to the place where Marine One is. So it's a little bit out in a little bit of a field. It's always really hard to figure out what shoes to wear so that you didn't sink in.
I mean,
this is like actually a huge problem for women.
I have the same problem.
But, you know, wedges worked well. So They say goodbye to each other. We board Marine One, and 41 does not get back in the vehicle.
Hmm.
And he's standing there, and the chopper starts. The blades start whirring, and it's kicking up dust and all this wind. And 41 is leaning into the wind, saluting the presidency of the United States. Not his son, but the office of the presidency. And 43, we were in the chopper, and he looks out and he says, "Look at my dad. He is the biggest patriot the world's ever seen." It was just a cool moment.
That is a cool moment.
It was great.
He loves America.
Loves America. So why did I get you off topic?
Well, before we get back on topic, news just crossed. Reported.
Boing.
Fox News. Alert. Boom. Former FBI director Robert Mueller.
Wrote a memo?
but he's gonna. Okay. And that he has been appointed as essentially, in the name of continuity, that he has been appointed a special counsel on the Russia investigation at the Justice Department.
Oh, and, really?
Yes, to oversee.
At the Justice Department?
Yep.
So who made that decision?
Well, I'm trying to read it.
Okay.
I can't. I can only.
You're gonna
fake,
break
I,
some news. You better.
I can only fake half of the news. So it sounds like this is the work. So Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, it sounds like he tapped him for the sake of continuity and for all purposes. And that's a pretty inspired pick, I have to say. Mueller is seen very much as a straight shooter. He is seen very much in Washington. He is seen very much as a guy who is a stiff upper lip kind of FBI dude.
Wasn't he? He was.
He was FBI.
He was an answer to one of our trivia questions last week.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Because he took office 7 days
before
9/11.
And so Mueller acquitted himself, I would say, though he has foes in Washington, he acquitted himself with honor in his tenure as FBI director. And this is a big good choice, it looks like to me, at least from a political point of view.
But I don't understand. Why do they need a special counsel? How many lawyers do they have there?
So you need a person who can, because the problem.
Do we not have that in the entire Justice Department? I get it, but I mean. It always seems like government has to layer on
I think at this swamp. I think at this moment, madam, we can spare the extra cost and annoyance of having another layer on this, because the great fear is at the end of the process, when whatever the FBI issues forth is issued, that people on whichever side is unhappy will say, it was rigged, fake news. This is not a real answer. This is not this. So.
Well, also, I think that Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general, mm-hmm. who wrote the memo at the request of President Trump about Comey.
Right.
And then there was all that kerfuffle.
Right. Quite.
He, as the deputy attorney general, would oversee the FBI. But also remember, Attorney General Jeff Sessions is recused from any Russia matter.
Right.
And I think Rosenstein realized that just because of the way it turned out, whether intentionally or not, it became political, and he then was not going to be able to be credible in this issue.
Well, he also, it's not his job. And so he needs somebody reporting to him. He needs a person who is bringing him the fish and the creel. He can't be catching them himself. And to pick somebody, and kudos, by the way, to Mueller for. It's interesting as they interview people as the caliber, and I shouldn't say this, but we
yeah,
start.
Yeah, nobody listens.
That's true.
It's just a podcast.
It's just Angie.
and Aaron.
And Aaron. And
Kevin Post of the Blake Shelton Band.
And Tora, the diabetic cat.
Oh, also Ashley Strong. I think she listens from the
Probably not.
Office.
Probably not after what we said about the healthcare bill that one time.
Yeah, she's mad at you about that.
Yeah, well, it was a terrible bill. Anyway, just from a political point of view, it may heal the sick and raise the dead, but from a political point of view, it was a bad bill. The idea of having somebody like Mueller, who can say, this is the real stuff. This is the Megillah. He's an experienced investigator, led the FBI, bipartisan, blah, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah, he's one of these, like, he's a D.C. giant, and he's really...
The deep state.
He is, part of the swamp, I guess, whatever. I don't mean that derogatorily. I'm saying that
he's
people
one of
say,
the top, one of the be, he's on one of the best lily pads in the swamp.
He reminds me of Fred Fielding.
Yeah. Okay. Good one.
And he also reminds me of, and the name is escaping me, which is a real shame. I hope he doesn't listen to this podcast. Who was the gentleman that we asked to help head up the 9/11 fund, victims fund?
Oh, who also did the BP payouts at
and
the
he
Gulf.
Did the Katrina money.
Feinberg.
Yes. What a great guy.
A mensch.
Interesting. Okay. And then also, but do you see how these people are like, thanks for calling me about the FBI director job. And yeah, I'm not going to.
Well, that's what I was.
The latest was Alice Fisher.
I was intimating before that the caliber of the individuals being mentioned for this, I don't want to say has gone down. But at the beginning, it's like Merrick Garland. Mm-hmm. And Merrick Garland goes, nah, bro. And you go, well, what about Senator John Cornyn? Pass, Trey Gowdy, And you know why?
I think they're too involved in politics right now.
It's also going to be a disaster. It's a thankless, terrible job.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, come on. You might get fired.
Well, who cares? I mean, you go into it, you know, well, I mean, you don't, you, all of us
can
get fired at any time. Like, if anybody at Fox actually listened to this podcast, we would probably get fired.
Well, we're probably going to get fired no matter what. So.
They didn't even bleep something I said last week.
I know. Well,
I know.
You have the least expected Lutheran potty mouth in the universe of Lutheran potty mouths.
When you told me that about my phone and the iWatch, I haven't even taken it off its charge. I just look at it like, I don't know how to use you.
How do you resent this phone or this watch so much? I think it's a great invention.
I'm feeling overwhelmed by technology. There's just so much of it. And a good friend of mine is sending me a new innovation, a product that I actually think is going to be awesome. It's called the Light Phone.
Okay.
And it will only light up if there's a text or a call. And that way basically when you go on a walk or if you want to go to dinner or something, you don't mm-hmm. have to keep constantly checking your phone. And I'm like, oh, that's great. I'm like, wait, how many devices are we supposed to carry at all times?
I'm a hard pass on that. By the way, I would think that the Apple Watch would do wonders for a person who has a weird and changing schedule to make sure that she was eating, sleeping, walking, because you care about these. I don't.
You want to hear something depressing?
About these things. Yes. No, I don't want to hear anything depressing.
Well, not depressing. But so ever since the new schedule, when the 5 moved from 5 to 9,
I've
been trying to figure out some things. Like, in a lot of ways, it's been great. My days are so long, and I don't get tired during the day, and I can pack in a ton of stuff. And actually, Peter called me today and said, my darling, I'm wondering, are you just filling up those additional 5 hours with work? I'm like, well, yeah, what do you think I'm doing?
I'm not stressing.
And
about
I had one of those
right
moments
now.
Where I'm right. like, obviously, like, you don't understand how hard it is and how many. I have so many people calling, like, for coffee or whatever, and a lot of it's for mentoring advice. And basically what I want is for the economy to start really growing so that people can have
jobs.
Some opportunities because they're ready and hungry for them. But anyway, the weather's been nicer.
It's too hot, but it's really hot
in New York. So I almost always walk to and from work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So somebody showed me the other day how on your phone you can look at it's kind of like a Fitbit type thing. So it shows you how far you've
walked.
That's
why you have an Apple Watch. Yes, go ahead. Go
I
on.
Know. But like, so that's why I'm saying, like, do I need an Apple Watch and a Fitbit and a
no,
phone? I
just
don't.
The watch, yes.
No, you just need the phone.
Go on.
Because as you said, if you're going to have the iWatch, you have to have the phone nearby. So then might as well just have the phone.
But what about your heart rate? What about your sleep pattern?
I don't care anything about that. Like my sleep pattern is a disaster. And that is like a problem. And I want to talk about that. Anyway, I thought that the distance between my apartment and Fox was a lot further than it is.
And then you realize farther you live than in the building. Right. Farther relates to distance,
right.
Further relates
so
to
So I thought it was farther than it is. And
right.
So now I look at it and I'm like, you mean I've only gotten that many steps or it's that many miles? And I walked back and forth to Fox twice today.
Right.
And I'm like, how could that only be 3.4 miles?
I mean, I just have no sympathy for you.
Why?
Because you're trim and fit. And just as a fat American, I walked to work today and it's like a mile. It's like
that's a good, that's a nice little walk.
It's supposed to take 27 minutes.
for a mile? To walk a mile?
That's more than a mile.
But yeah, again, that's got to be more than a mile.
But again, I'm slow. And so I set out, and it's a nice morning. I get halfway there. By the time I make it to the bureau for my 9 o'clock hit, before my 9 o'clock hit, they had to use hair dryers with
because you were hot and sweating.
Me.
Yeah,
I looked like talk about the BP oil spill.
It just doesn't pay to exercise.
I look like the BP oil spill.
It doesn't pay to exercise.
No,
but the other thing that's happening is I'm having a harder time winding down after the show than I thought I would to try to get to sleep. But still, I wake up with the sun. And the sun comes up now around 5:15.
Right.
So guess what I did today?
What did you do?
I got up because I didn't want to sleep and churn on all the stuff.
Right.
I reached over, looked at my phone. And I got lots of done. I read all the stuff. And I took a nap at 7:50 a.m. for 25 minutes.
So in most of the world, this would not be called a nap. This would be called going back to sleep. But that's good for you.
I was sitting up, though, so I think that's a nap.
I sometimes do the thing where I always wake up too early. Set the alarm, and then 2 hours before the alarm goes off, I wake up. And I have learned to start to try to, at least, give myself permission to go back to sleep. And it works. I used to believe that I could never get back to sleep. But the truth is, if I give myself permission to go back to sleep. I have to very intentionally say, it is okay. You can go back to sleep. It's all right. And that extra little half hour makes a big difference.
But the thing is, like, I'm excited to wake up. I'm like, woohoo, what's the day going to bring? I'm very much a morning person.
Right. That's why people hate you. But that's fine.
I don't understand that. Morning people actually get stuff done.
I am a morning person. That is my favorite thing. And last night there was a special report special, which you did not.
I still feel so guilty.
On which you did not.
You're adding the guilt on top of all the other things that happened to me today.
But that's fine.
I really did feel bad.
Mm-hmm, and I did it, and it was over at 12. And then, as you say, it's hard to wind down afterward. And this morning at 6 o'clock. And you get going. And then by 6 p.m., 12 hours later, you're punchy. I feel like I've been in a prize fight.
You feel punchy.
Yeah, exactly.
Want to hear a funny tweet?
Okay.
I just checked when we were looking for the Mueller news.
Yeah.
Jonah Goldberg tweeted, Rosenstein was like, anyone, Mueller. That's funny.
But look, Donald Trump needs this. He needs this.
Yeah, I think this helps get it. Like, oh, if he can stop talking about it.
Well, I mean, basically, there are.
And he won't be able to call Mueller up to the Oval Office.
No. Well, he can try. I think, by the way, that with Comey and I think the headlines were way off. Trump told Comey to shut down Russia probe.
Mm-hmm.
Trump. If the reporting is to be believed, Trump tried to wheedle favorable treatment out for his friend out of Comey. Do me a solid, man.
Right.
Help my buddy.
Which is inappropriate.
Well, duh, it's inappropriate. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say well, duh.
Yeah, excuse me.
I apologize for saying well, duh.
Don't worry, Internet, I'm not upset.
I apologize for my incivility. But I don't think Comey took him seriously. I don't think anybody in Washington right now is taking Donald Trump seriously. Remember the construct, the Selena Zito construct?
Yeah, take him.
That voters took him seriously, but not literally.
And reporters took him literally, but not seriously. Yeah.
Which is, there's truth in it. I don't think anybody's taking him seriously
but
now.
But the thing is, though, it's the intent. Because.
Oh.
No, I'm just going to raise it because this is what the Democrats will do.
Okay.
And they have to be prepared for it, which is they'll say, well, why did President Trump ask everyone to leave the room?
Oh, no. Oh, don't mistake me. That would be Article 1 of the impeachment.
Right.
Oh.
I do not think he's going to be impeached.
Not until the Democrats take the House.
But I also am skeptical about that. However, I heard something today that was kind of interesting. They're apparently starting to get back some deep data.
Yeah.
On the American Health Care Act.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's bad.
It's toxic.
I think if you held the election today, the Democrats would win 40 seats.
I still think that Trump's voters will come out in the midterms.
Yes, and they'll lose because the Democrats will come out too. The perilousness of the position for the Republicans is not to be underestimated. Now, there's a lot of time between now and the election.
Yeah, thank goodness. I cannot believe we're actually talking about it.
Well, but I mean, this is how
this
we
is true.
As the philosopher said, this is how we do it.
But I actually don't think the Democrats actually want to impeach him. I think they actually want the story. Plus, when the Republicans
impeached
Bill Clinton, Bill
votes.
Clinton's approval rating went up with the Democrats. If you want to unite Republicans, you could try this. I'm trying that out.
They don't.
Like if I say it out loud,
they don't have the votes. The concern for the Democrats is that they are seen as the impeachment party, and that's all they are, and they're screaming, and then voters are like, ugh.
Yeah, but like,
the better voice for Democrats right now is, we will be a check on this intemperate and chaotic presidency.
But also, what is impeachable at this point? I mean, they were calling impeachment before he even started. Before he even took the oath of office.
Well, I mean,
I think it's unwise what he did.
Let me
politically problematic, but it doesn't seem illegal.
So we'll put it this way. If Donald Trump was the mayor of Providence, Rhode Island, and he called the prosecutor for the, or if, I guess it's probably a county system, but whatever. If he's the mayor and he calls the prosecutor in and says, I hope that you are able to help my friend out and that you can let these charges go against him, the prosecutor might say, and I'm going to charge you with obstruction of justice for trying to pressure me into doing that. But no one is going to criminally prosecute the sitting president of the United States.
Mm-mm.
That's not going to happen. Donald Trump will be impeached if Democrats take the House. Of course. And remember, the Constitution gives Congress. So the way impeachment works is the House functions essentially as the grand jury, a low threshold of evidence. And essentially what constitutes a high crime or misdemeanor is whatever a simple majority of the House says is a high crime or misdemeanor. 218 members of the House say that's a high crime or misdemeanor, then the charge is issued, and then the Senate, and this is much like the rest, like our criminal justice system, requires a supermajority in the Senate to get the conviction and remove him from office. Two have been impeached, none have been convicted, and therefore none have been removed. That was by design by the founders. But of course the Democrats would impeach him. And of course when he did it to himself when he told Lester Holt that canning Comey over the handling of the Russia investigation was part of his thinking. As soon as he said that, Yahtzee, all done,
yeah.
And you've got plenty of grounds under the constitutional terms. And then it's compounded by Comey's memo, which can you imagine the how unwise it is to make angry somebody to humiliate somebody like James Comey, this proud, perhaps prideful man,
right,
who is a scrupulous. Do you remember Barton Gellman's book, Angler?
That brings up really, really bad memories for me.
Perhaps you do.
I was so immersed in that and angry when it came out.
Well, then you read it and you remember that Gellman used a lot from James Comey about memos that James Comey sent.
I know. I brought this up last night on The Five because one of the co-hosts had said, well, this will be just all – it'll be hard to prove that these actual memos were dated on that date and everything. And I thought right back to that book. I didn't remember it was Angler, but I remember the whole issue. I'm like, no, actually, he documents all of it. And it's his practice to
right.
do that.
And it's a smart practice in Washington. And it all sounds perfectly believable. And again, no one is going to criminally prosecute Donald Trump. But – and you can barely criminally prosecute a sitting president because the everything bounces back to Congress. And the Republicans aren't going to remove him, or at least not yet.
I had a question for you. I had lunch today with somebody who is quite a historian himself.
Okay.
And he was talking about how he agrees with me, and then I saw a Halftime Report, and I sent it to him, saying that the impeachment thing is just way overblown.
Right.
Okay. But he was talking about how Andrew Johnson got a raw deal. Do you know that story?
He did get a raw deal, but he did it to himself. Andrew Johnson was very much like Trump. Andrew Johnson did not have the support of his own party, was very angry about a number of things. And essentially,
what year was that? Or years?
Well, ballpark. Remember that time Lincoln got assassinated?
Okay, right around then.
Yeah.
Obviously.
In fact, at that exact moment.
At that exact moment. But I couldn't remember because I was thinking that when you say he's like Johnson, I thought people thought he was more like, who's the other guy that he went to see in Tennessee?
Jackson.
Jackson.
No, no. Donald Trump is nothing like Andrew Jackson.
Okay, now I'm confused.
So Andrew Jackson, Old Hickory, the hero of the Battle of New Orleans.
Right. Isn't that who Trump says he's like?
Yeah, but he is nothing like
him. Oh, okay. So he says, okay, got it.
He and I assume Steve Bannon, who has a pretty good grasp of history, wants to see Trump as a Jacksonian figure. But he is not.
Not Johnson. Aha. No. Uh-huh. This is what he was talking about.
But
today.
Andrew Johnson
over
was
a kale salad.
Right. Oh, Lord. Andrew, I had steak for lunch with Harry Enten today.
Mm, and a Diet Coke?
He definitely had a Diet Coke, and we agreed that you were wrong and that Diet Coke tastes like battery acid. But whatever. Andrew Johnson, who assumed the presidency upon Lincoln's assassination, and it's spring of 1865, and the Republicans hate him because he's essentially a Democrat. He's a Tennessean. He's a Southerner. They don't trust him. There are no Democrats because we're still reconstructing. And essentially, Congress lays a trap for Andrew Johnson, who was just a dreadful president because he was constantly consumed by the resentments and anger, and it was a mess. And they basically passed a law that said that the president can't fire cabinet members without approval from the Senate. And he said, and he was quite right in saying that's not constitutional. That's not a real law. But he, as I recall, and I may be getting this wrong and your friend will correct me, I believe he signed it to spite them and then did it to test them and then ended up getting impeached over it. And then you remember the famous scene, they bring I can't remember which senator, but on his deathbed or on his sickbed, they brought him in on a stretcher to vote against conviction in the Senate. But Trump is very much so far like Andrew Johnson. He is angry at his party, the other party, at the press. He is so full of rage at all of these people and blame. You know, I said to somebody the other day, as these Republicans keep talking about blaming the lying press, the liberal press, the blah, blah, blah press, I make the comparison to Napoleon, and everybody blames the Russian winner for Napoleon's loss in 1812. Well, they have the winner every year in Russia, guys. So if you're complaining about it's not the winner that did Napoleon in. It was the failure of Napoleon to account for the harsh conditions that he would face in his invasion. And I'm beyond people complaining about Democrats are resisting. As much as I was with Democrats complaining about Republican intransigence, much as I have always been about Republicans, well, the media this, the media that. Well, okay, suck it up. Life's hard. Being president is hard. It's all complicated.
Well,
we
talk a little bit about communications on this podcast. So we just said that the AHCA polling numbers are toxic.
Those are the cuts to
something
Obamacare.
Something President Trump did not do, or they didn't have him do, is hit the road either before or after that bill and use the bully pulpit and the power of persuasion to explain to people why it's a good bill with granular detail. Like, these are the things that you do as president. It's not, maybe he doesn't like to do it, but it would help.
But it's, well, go ahead.
Okay, but let's just say that maybe it would have given people more comfort with the bill if they had heard it from him.
Okay.
Okay. Maybe it would only be his base, but like they are even wobbly on this legislation.
Yeah.
Okay. Then they have this really great concept for his first foreign trip to go to Saudi, Israel, and the Vatican before he goes to NATO, unless he cuts the trip short.
The three great cities of the Abrahamic faith.
And the concept is to try to unite against intolerance, to combat intolerance. I think that's a really neat concept for the trip. I think it's bold. He didn't just like go up to Canada or something for his first foreign trip.
This is much like, it's very reminiscent of Obama's address.
He's
going to
give
world.
A big speech in Saudi Arabia. Like,
he's going to tell.
This is going to be great.
Muslims,
so
right.
When he's at Liberty University for the commencement address, instead of complaining about media bias, he could have set up this trip and why he's going there to talk about how we should unite to combat intolerance.
I don't think he's serious about doing a good job.
Okay, but can I just finish, like, if I were them, communications?
Because
I had this in my head, and no one else actually listens to me, so I'm going to force you to do it.
You don't have to force me.
Then, okay, here's another thing that's happening this week.
Mm-hmm.
So today he gave a speech to the Coast Guard. It was fine, whatever. I mean, he again talks about media bias. But the troops, the graduates love it, and it's great for him, whatever. But from just driving a news standpoint, what comes out of it is he said, no one has ever been more victimized than me by the media.
Speaking of
And
Lincoln.
Guess what's happening tomorrow on Capitol Hill?
What?
The first and perhaps only House Republican committee hearing on tax reform.
Yeah.
And nobody knows about it.
No.
Except for, like, the four people that listen to this. So yeah. I'm just saying, bummer, because this stuff got all in the way. They weren't. And also, why don't they have him out there meeting with the people? Not just the rallies. But he likes meeting with factory workers. He likes being out there.
They're freaked. They're in chaos. Why don't they have him out there?
Well, I got to tell you, don't you think he'd be better off out there doing stuff than in the White House?
No, because then he says stuff.
No, I don't think so. If he's out there meeting people, he doesn't have time to say stuff and watch TV all day.
So the best times, I wrote about this today, the best times for the Trump campaign were after periods of real horror.
Right.
After the when people said, even if you're right, don't fight with the parents of a slain Marine from Iraq. Don't do it. And it was like, no, I'm doing it. And then there was the other one I forgot about, Alicia Machado, the Miss Universe who he called Miss Piggy. And he fought with her. And then the worst, of course, was when he joked about sexual assault with Billy Bush. And in the periods after stinging humiliations of those magnitudes, and his poll numbers would drop and there'd be a crisis. You remember Mike Pence even walked away from Trump after the sexual assault stuff.
Yep.
And he was chastened and was quiet and was behaved. And remember, I'll probably be the most presidential president ever. Maybe Lincoln. He acknowledged might be more presidential than him, but he would be the most. And he made a promise to voters in the closing weeks of the election. I've learned. I was chastened. I'm embarrassed. My daughter yelled at me. I can do this. And at the same time, Hillary Clinton's campaign got toasted like raviolis because of the Comey letter and the final resumption of her terribles. And Trump was a different Trump. In the closing month or in the closing 3 weeks. And the best hope for the people at the White House who are essentially under siege from within and without. They're under siege from their own boss and they're under siege from the press corps and the Democrats and everybody else. The best hope for them is that Trump at a certain point becomes so chastened that it hurts so much to have day after day of self-inflicted wounds, to be handing the battle axe to Democrats day in and day out, that at a certain point that he becomes willing to be quiet, that he becomes willing to be respectful, that he becomes willing to be disciplined, even if it's just for a period of time, so that you can catch your breath and try to get a step. I'll simplify. Until the moment comes, as we were talking about earlier, that he will accept having a chief of staff, whether it's the current one or a different one, who is allowed to be a chief of staff, until he accepts someone, until he has enough trust and faith in another person to accept parameters for his own conduct and to allow that chief of staff to arrange that space, this presidency will continue to be this kind of a freewheeling disaster. And nothing will change it except for Trump's willingness to accept those strictures.
I was reminded last Friday, I was at the Bush Library for this Presidential Leadership Scholars series that they do, which, by the way, if you're listening, four people, it's really great if you're looking for the next step in your career or your life. If you've sort of look at a midpoint in your career and you wanted to go and do something amazing, this Presidential Leadership Scholars program is great. So the session I was doing was about decision making. And we're talking about time management at the White House and how important it is for the president's time to be protected and managed. And Andy Card had a saying that if you needed to see the president, you would. If you wanted to see the president, you never will.
You never will.
I love that.
That's perfect.
That way you don't ask to see the president for no reason.
And Trump has this swirling, all of the clattering.
But I think he does like to have the people around.
Of course. But being president sucks. Being president sucks. It's supposed to suck.
Right.
It's designed to suck. People think, oh, you get the jet.
It's like kids. I never asked to be born.
Right. And you asked.
That actually you did ask the country.
You asked to be president. Being president sucks. It's supposed to suck. It is not. George Washington did not say, you know, it would be baller. You know, it would be awesome. I'd be president and then I could do whatever I want. No. The answer is, this is going to hurt. This is going to cost time and money. It's going to make my hair turn gray or
fall
out.
Where do you stand on whether they should do a big staff reorganization?
Oh, yeah. That's what they need right now is a bloodletting. I think that these poor people live in fear, terror, anguish every day.
Mm.
They don't know. Their boss doesn't trust them. He doesn't empower them. They don't trust him. There is no trust. And the amount of respect that is – respect is a two-way street. And there is none in this White House right now. What a mess. On that note
– I think he is trying to make it a little better. Oh, no. I don't – what do I know?
You know what I like about you? Mm-hmm. I like a lot of things about you. I especially like your sense of humor. And I especially like your relentless cheerfulness. But your capacity for optimism is one of the very finest things about you, sister. I am reasonably informed just moments ago that I am now going to be in the 7 o'clock show. So that means I have
to. You got
to
go.
I got to shake a tail feather. To that end.
Shake a tail. Okay, you have questions?
To that end,
we'll do like three.
Your mailbag.
We'll do it fast.
Well, I mean, you know.
We didn't really talk about food, but okay.
Well, maybe food will come up. I have not previewed these questions in any way, and I will go through them.
Okay.
Not reading that one.
There were some doozies. I saw a few of them.
Whoo!
Some of them are mean.
Oh, can we explain this? Ask her why you do not show the proper respect for the president of the United States by calling him President Trump, not just Trump. How about that, sir?
Well, like in the newspaper, I try to refer to him on first reference as President Trump.
Right.
And then after that, Trump suffices. To me, I think the surname suffices after that. It's not meant as disrespect. And
no.
That it was the same with Bush and Obama and Clinton.
Right.
And all the rest.
And what's funny is the same people, I mean, you do it to Obama, you do it to Bush. That's the journalistic style. First reference, President Trump. Second reference, Trump. First reference. Now, Bush made it more complicated.
Yeah, because you had Bush 41, Bush 43. That's how those numbers were used. Now, like some places, I think, is it the Wall Street Journal uses Mr. Trump?
Yeah, some publications use Mr.'s.
I could, but you know, look, it's live TV, and let me tell you something. I'm not the only one doing it.
Well, and also
it's journalism people.
But also, we would say to HawkFan 0607, that Dana Perino is doing what is quite proper and quite respectful, and you should not worry about it. I think Trisha Miller, in general, will cover a whole category of these questions that are in here. What would Dana do?
Okay.
And I think to the current situation for this.
Oh, we just laid it out. I just told you like all the laying out the calm stuff, like figuring out what is the ultimate goal, like what is the president's policy agenda, what does he want to achieve, and set that over here on the right, and then work your way backwards. So what can you do every week in the lead up to that to make sure that he can get to his goal? If the goal is to have a vote in the Senate by December 1st, 2017, fine. Then how do you work your way backwards to do it? And then you build a campaign around that, and that you try every day to be proactive, and you try not to get in your own way. And sometimes it's okay to refer things to other agencies. For example, the other thing is, I'd be using some of these cabinet members. Linda McMahon, for example, is one of the most interesting cabinet members that got confirmed. She runs a small business administration. He's for small businesses. Have you seen her?
Mm-hmm.
Where are these people? He has a good cabinet, and I think they should use them more.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, and a million other things I would do. I'm an idea factory.
You are an idea factory. You are
it's kind of annoying for people.
Well, you're a genie.
Mm.
An engine.
Aha. Okay, cute.
People When people like you.
No,
like
I saw some of those people do not.
They like you. Well, some of them don't. But people like you and they like your dog. I'm trying to choose among this little snatch here. And I will say, there's a food question. Okay, I can't resist.
Okay.
Just because of the taunting. Where was it? It was about your terrible brisket, and I really want to ask you about your terrible brisket. I always want to ask you about the terrible brisket. So I guess we'll just count that.
Can you actually eat like full-on steak when it's this hot?
I ate a steak for lunch today.
Oof.
Really?
I don't think I could do that.
Harry Enton, I tell you what. Harry Enton is a skinny individual.
Yeah.
But, buddy, he put that steak away.
Like, he invited me to go to Arthur Avenue with him.
What is that? Is that
it's in
code?
Queens, and there's a lot of good food there, apparently.
But you don't eat. So what would that do for you?
Mm. No, I eat something.
Sometimes, just the pills.
He gets me.
Oh, it is. Yes. From Caitlin Thibb. People she admires and looks up to, and I'm going to put in parentheses, with whom she did not serve in the Bush administration or who are related to George W. Bush in business,
a small circle.
Or business or personal life that she looks up to. And it was Caitlin who mocked you about your terrible brisket.
Wow, there's a lot. I really love columnists.
Mm-hmm.
I have such an appreciation for what they do, and I try to read as many columnists as I can because I think they're doing some of the best work in journalism. I put you in that category. I look forward to Halftime Report every day because it's thoughtful. And it's interesting. If you have a limited time to actually consume news, if you read some of these good columnists, you can get the news plus what people think about it. And I read columnists from the left and the right. I think
Got
the
to.
Writing is very impressive, and it helps me think things through and also gives me a chuckle sometimes in the morning when there's hair on fire.
Mm-hmm.
I always think that people like Johnson Sirleaf, the first woman who's president of first woman to be elected president in Africa. She's president of Liberia.
Mm-hmm.
You know what she went through in order to get back there and try to help her country. It's just so impressive. But so there's a lot of people like that. But I would have to say, if I was just choosing some, I would say that writers. I said the other day, like someone like Ann Patchett. I've never met her. I've talked about her on this podcast. She writes a lot of nonfiction, but she's mostly known for her best-selling fiction books. This one I just read, Chris, you'd love it. It's called The Patron Saint of Liars.
You are plugging this thing hard.
I would really love to meet her and ask her, but I'll just look it up online to see if I can find it, how she came up with that story. I wonder if there was something ever that was there in Habit, Kentucky. Is there a place called Habit, Kentucky?
Probably. If there's a pie West Virginia, there's got to be a Habit, Kentucky.
What if you had a pie Habit in West Virginia?
There's also, I will tell you what, in Kentucky, there's a town in Kentucky, and I swear this is actually true, called Rough and Tough.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
But I would say I admire writers the most because of just the craft. I would love to be able to write fiction like that, but I feel like I just don't have enough imagination.
Oh, I got my copy of Shelley's Heart for you.
Oh, great. Are you going to hand deliver it? Because I have nut punch.
I don't want any of that.
You need to eat the paleo punch ones because they're disgusting.
They're fine.
No, the pine nut ones are fine. The nut punch ones are fine. But the paleo punch, I don't like it at all.
I'll eat
also,
it all.
Also, I got these carrot mango popsicles.
Mm-hmm.
Really good.
Yeah, sounds great.
Do you want your trivia question?
Yeah, I want my trivia.
Okay, number one.
Okay.
Remember that President Trump gave the commencement address at the United States Coast Guard today.
Yes.
Oh, darn it, I didn't have time to ask you about what the Turks did yesterday on Embassy Row.
Oh, gross.
And do you know what makes me so mad?
What?
And I understand there's the diplomatic reasons and la, la, la. But I really believe, like, if anybody could have popped Erdogan in the nose for that, it was President Trump. But the State Department...
I think he likes Erdogan.
Weasley's statement was so disappointing to me.
I think he likes Erdogan.
Apparently, our cops or Secret Service helped detain some of the Turks.
Did you?
Then they had to let them go because of diplomatic immunity.
But I tell you what, a couple of those D.C. Metropolitan Police Department officers had a good sled ride on the faces of a couple of those fellas.
And do you know who got the video?
Who?
Voice of America Turkey.
VOA is so great.
They are great, and they don't get enough credit for being great.
VOA is just so great.
And boy, they're under a lot of pressure. They get no credit. You know what would be cool? Like, President Trump should go visit Voice of America or the Broadcasting Board of Government. Like, go visit. Go meet these people. If he saw their surroundings, he would build them a new building.
Yeah,
guaranteed.
Truly.
And, yeah, so anyway, they're great. They're great. Okay. Wait, this is a long podcast. Sorry, people.
Sorry, people.
Question number one.
Yep.
The U.S. Coast Guard's history goes back to its origins as the United States Revenue Cutter Service.
Right.
It was established on August 4th, 1790, based on the recommendation of this man. Can you name him?
Who would have recommended for the creation? One would say Revenue 1790 Aham would seem to be the guy, since he liked revenue a lot. But I also... Monroe was a freak for the Navy. He was a freak for nautical stuff. I'm going Hamilton just because of the money.
You're right.
Okay.
Money, 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 money. Question number two.
Okay.
Under which three departments of the federal government has the Coast Guard served under?
Well, currently, sadly, it is part of the Department of Homeland Security, the misbegotten Department of Homeland Security.
Soon to be home of Sheriff Clark.
Isn't that something?
Something.
Isn't that something? So... DHS, I'm going to guess that it was Treasury at the beginning.
Yep.
And then in the middle, I'll say, who was it before? I guess DOD, I guess defense or war.
Transportation.
Well, I guess so.
And then DHS. And also, just as a little note, it was mobilized in World Wars I and II to operate under the Department of the Navy.
So I'm technically...
Technically correct.
Technically correct.
Do you know... So the Coast Guard, I think that's a great choice for young people if you want to serve. Coast Guard is awesome. Also, you know what people forget about?
They have cool ships.
No, the Merchant Marines.
Merchant Marine is great. And the Merchant Marine
Andy
Academy,
Card was a Merchant Marine.
Merchant Marine Academy, which is in Delaware, I believe.
I thought it was here in New York.
Is it? Well, I'll take your word for it.
I don't know.
You know things. But the Merchant Marine Academy is the – people forget it's that time of the year that every senator, every – so they can get these appointments, and this consumes a lot of their time every year as students from their districts seek appointments to the service academies. And guess what? Lots of appointments are sought for Annapolis.
Yep.
A lot are sought for West Point. A lot are sought for the Air Force Academy. But then there's the Coast Guard Academy and the Merchant Marine Academy that are, by the way, not only is school free, but they pay you because you're part of it while you're there. And they are often overlooked, and they are excellent institutions that allow somebody to serve the country and do an enormous amount of good.
I'm told by Jason Bonewall the Merchant Marines headquarters is in Long Island, New York. Shout out to a young person who listens to this podcast. She's 18. I held her when she was a baby. Her name is Isabella Sale.
What's up, Isabella?
She's from Washington, D.C. She, in the fall, will be a United States Air Force Academy cadet.
Off we go.
And it is awesome.
Off we go into the wild blue yonder.
Indeed.
All right. Cool.
Rock and roll. Okay. I got to close this thing up.
That's your job.
Sorry. I know Martha McCallum's waiting for you, but I just want to make her a little nervous that you might be late. All right. For more podcasts, go to foxnewspodcast.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this one on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, and leave us a review. This has been Perino and Starwalt. I'll tell you what, on Fox News Radio.